Dragon Age 2 original video game soundtrack. Not that I'm interested in video games, frankly, but the Templars. Who were they indeed? Well, we might get around to that. In the studio with me, great pleasure to welcome Paulina. Is it Paulina or Paulina?
Paulina.
Paulina Howfield to the studio, who is the author of her new book. It's not the first book, but a book, Remembering Isis, Reconnecting the Divine Feminine at the Goddess Temples of Malta. There's a lot in that. Isis, Divine Feminine, Goddess Temples in Malta. So we'll tease out a little bit of this today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, you've written other books before on this journey, but how would you describe yourself? Because you are a psychotherapist, an educator, art therapist, a counsellor, but how would you now describe yourself at this point in your life, in your career?
I would say that those things are still part of what I do. So I have a mixed bag of skills, and within the background of that, I work with earth energies and work in healing. And basically, my big thing is really about helping others to understand the divine feminine consciousness. And I work with the earth in order to help that.
Yes. Okay. As we talked off air, I mean, there are other people, including my girlfriend at the moment, who does similar work. And I think it's fascinating working with, and maybe we'll explain this first, with, as you call them, geomythic earth templates. Which I think is it's a beautiful phrase, geomythic. How would you explain that word? Did you make that word up? I don't think I've actually seen that word before. It's a word.
I might have made that word up, but I don't know if I should take that credit. It kind of came to me, I guess, that whoever makes anything up, really. Geo being earth and mythic being the archetypal resonances and the mythologies that we have. So within the earth are these imprints that have been there for a long, long time.
Yes.
And they impact us because we are mythical beings.
Okay. And those imprints that are there, because they're not all, of course, positive imprints. There are imprints of change in history that have occurred in places, and we'll get around to Malta in particular, because this is what your book's about, due to war and oppression, and particularly the suppression and oppression of the feminine by the masculine forces down through the last several thousand years or more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an imprint that's there too, and this is part of what you do in going to these sites and reconfiguring those energies,
That's correct.
Yep.
It's since the beginning of time, Earth has been a library of everything that's happened here. She holds the imprint. Mm-hmm. So as we move towards being more divinely feminine in our consciousness, right brain, intuitive, creative, we need to understand that the experiences and our activities throughout the history of Earth have left imprints or energetic stamps in different places. And if we want to really become multidimensional beings living on a fifth dimensional planet, which people are talking about quite a lot lately, we need to clear all that.
Common conversations in Lumbibi Cafe. Just what you're talking about there. I'm not kidding. It's true. Because you say, I mean, we'll go back to the first part of this, but you just from what you just said then, you say that in this period, since you had a kind of awakening and near-death experience, we'll come to it in a moment, in the 80s, that you've created a symbiotic physical and telepathic relationship with angelic beings, extraterrestrials, and galactic bodies that enabled you to effectively assist them in cleansing, aligning, and balancing Earth's subtle bodies to prepare Earth and humanity for our collective journey of enlightenment. Don't you get tired? Do you drink coffee?
Whenever I can.
Good on you. I mean, let's go to the angelic beings and the extraterrestrials. I mean, okay, the ETs, who are you talking to? Who's talking to you? Who do you connect with?
There's quite a lot, really, because in the planet herself is the seeding of all the beings that ever came here. So there's beings that come here now, there's beings that have come here for a long time.
Yes.
So we've got beings from the Pleiades, we've got beings from Arcturus, we've got beings from Sirius, we've got beings from pretty much any galaxy you can think of, Cygnus, you name it.
Did you mention the Arcturians?
Did I mention the Arcturians? Yes. I meant to if I didn't.
Because they don't like to be not mentioned.
No, they don't.
They've got friends who have got Arcturians down here, and they like to be acknowledged. Because
exactly.
They get pushed aside by the Pleiadians and the Syrians, I think,
Well, they do.
But all this came about when you had a near-death experience in the 1980s, and you remembered what you came here to do. What can you give us a little brief synopsis of what happened and how that came to be?
Well, I was living in Israel, and I had been traveling for some time, visiting sacred sites and doing things. And I would say now that I was doing those things quite unconsciously, but it was time for me to become the conscious esoteric map maker and earth energy worker. And I do believe that NDEs are encoded in the soul. I talk about that in some places that I go through. Near-death experiences,
yeah.
That's right. And so I think I needed to wake up to what I have come to do and remember skills from past lives, skills that perhaps I'd left in different places, energy places that I'd worked with before. And so in the experience, I had been ill for a period of time with an acute illness, and then it became an acute issue. I left my body, went up into the stars. I was pulled out by what I would call the eye of the universe, went out into the stars, into the galaxies. While I was there, I ended up in corridors of light, became the four elements, earth, air, fire, and water. And in that process, realized, and I was a backpacker at the time, so I realized I was like carrying a backpack of stuff that was just heavy and not me. And then began the process of healing a damaged body when I came back and took on a sense of really studying past lives, needed to go and study the art therapy. That was something that came really clear to me, and refocus on healing. And from there, I began doing the conscious earth energy work, and then it became absolutely clear that's exactly what I was supposed to be doing and why.
Mm. I mean, you talk about, like the phrase, interacting with the soul of the earth. And then it's not about saving the environment. I mentioned that before, forming a relationship with the natural world. It's something else. What is it then?
Well, it's ancient. If you speak to people from indigenous cultures and earth-based cultures, they've had this relationship with the earth and the cosmos since the beginning of time. And as Western cultures, we've moved away from that. We've become quite separate. And they have relationships with the invisible worlds and the soul of the earth. So if you think of the earth as a living being, she has subtle bodies, she has chakra points, she has energy nodes, the same as we do. We're a mirror of each other. And that's deliberate, because then we can form a symbiotic relationship with her. So the soul, like we have a soul, speaks to us, communicates to us. And if we listen and we communicate with her, she can teach us a lot about our history, our present, and our future.
Yes, very good. Your book is entitled, to begin with, Remembering Isis. So the Isis, of course, is probably the most well-known Egyptian goddess, and was partner to Osiris. And Osiris was cut up by Set, who was
brother
of Isis.
Brother, yes.
Isis' brother Set cut Osiris up, scattered his parts across Egypt down the Nile, and Isis had to go and collect those parts, but she couldn't find one part, and that was his penis.
That's correct.
What's that mean?
Well, I believe that it's an encoded wisdom, really, about how we as human beings can learn from these stories. And we have a mythology that runs through Western culture, particularly about women and how easily women can castrate men. So if we don't have a penis, we want a penis, apparently.
And that's according to Jung, not to Jung, to Freud, I think.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And so the Isis myth really is about embracing the masculine and the feminine, healing the feminine and the masculine at the same time to become more enlightened.
Because the fear is this castration of men.
Exactly.
Yeah. And as you said, the unconscious perception of that has been overlaid with cultural ideologies, individual, collective, individual memories and personal experiences, and has become confused in the psyche of our collective human history. Confused? Why confused?
Because I think that we often have these mythologies and archetypal resonances running through our cultures without actually realizing where they come from or what the truth is. And so often you will hear in the collective community about a woman wearing particular clothing, and so somehow she's giving off the wrong message. Or women who embrace their own power or are good at what they do, they're trying to take a man's job, or they're trying to be a man rather than a woman.
Yeah.
So those things.
Yeah, that's good. That's very good. Now, your journey towards Malta and the particular work which this book articulates is a bit of a journey in itself. The connection with Malta to the UK, to France and Egypt and all of that started back in your working, I believe, with some of the churches in London.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Was working with a particular set of churches in the East End of London that went back to the 17th century and the things that took place after the Great Fire in London, and they started to build churches that were going to not burn down, so they had to be built with stone.
Yes.
So they were placed in particular templates in order to ensure that energies that people wanted to seed in London were there. As I was working with them, and I was working there with a colleague, it became absolutely clear that all of these templates were mirrors to other templates around the planet. And then they were mirrors to our connection, or the UK connection to Egypt, the UK connection to France and Italy, the UK connection in a way to everywhere. And from there, at one of the churches, I had this very interesting interaction with what I would call a dove of peace, which was really healing some of the masculine imprint in the earth. And then it became clear, it's time to go to Malta. You've got to do the work in Malta now, move to the goddess temple so you can balance the feminine and the masculine.
And I just should say, you wrote about some of this in your earlier book, Angels in the Architecture.
Correct,
yes, which I've seen that book around. So, I know that book, I've seen that. Now, Malta, of course, and all of these places are connected to, and you're using the word templates a lot there, and of course, the Knights Templar, same root, same word, and obviously with a significant correspondence of meaning there. And you had quite a number of experiences with the Knights Templar. Can you give us a bit of a sketch of who the Knights Templar were?
Okay.
Or are?
Okay.
And what are they doing now? And that's a big question. So, 60-second synopsis.
The Templars that I engaged with and engage with go back to the Knights Templar. And in London, for example, there's the Knights Templar Church. Around the world, there's Knights Templar churches, buildings, and constructions. And so in Malta, there's a lot of those. But there's also places that are quite esoterically oriented. So what they do is they have energy patterns in them. And the Knights Templars worked with these. So my understanding from that work is that the Knights Templars were actually really sophisticated, and they had access to fourth, fifth, sixth, and more dimensions. And so this is why they were a threat, because if they have this information and they're also offering healing, which was a predominant thing that they were supposedly doing underneath the warmongering, and creating templates buildings that had these templates in them that would last forever and would influence people, because that's what templates do, they worked with healing. And so they had this access to the fifth and sixth dimensions. And one of those places in Malta, they really worked with fungus. And the fungus was a healing. I know, that doesn't sound very exciting to think it's fungus.
Well, fungus has become quite popular these days. Various other associated entheogenic substances.
Yes, absolutely. Actually, it is a plant too. And it's a red fungus. And they used to use it for healing. But I think they also accessed it via what we term energy or etheric terms. So they did harvest off a rock, but they also accessed the dimensions of it, and it connected back to Andromeda, and they brought that energy forward. So all of this esoteric wisdom is behind the Templars, and is not just about them moving across countries and holding energies for war. It was about seeding things in different places on the planet.
Yes, indeed. And I should add, as I have already mentioned, that a bit later in the show today, at about 10:35, local narrator Vantari will be in the studio talking about his book, Sacred Geometry, which is very relevant to this, because, of course, those templates were built with sacred geometry.
They were indeed, which is why they've lasted so long.
Yes, indeed. So let's go to Malta then, and a place that, I personally had some relationship to Malta. I haven't been there, but someone that I know very well, a close friend of mine, lived there for quite a long time, and talked it up a lot about how amazing the place is in some way. And as you've said already, it's related to all these other European and beyond histories. You're drawn to Malta to this particular work for rebalancing the feminine to the masculine. Tell us a little bit about, and also exploring a bit of the military history of Malta, which figures into all this, because as you say, what happened there and in the Aegean Sea and some of the other islands was that the masculine presence, including the Templars, who had a very masculine spirituality, right, came in and sort of overlaid over the feminine spirituality and somehow subsumed it, and it kind of disappeared from its power, from its nascent power, its obvious power, expand power.
That's correct, because part of the reason we were drawn there was we were working with masculine templates, constructions. We needed to go and see these feminine goddess temples and also the Knights Templar templates. Sorry, too many
temples
that have been
temples.
There.
Hang on. Nuns, temples, templates in the temples.
That's correct. Right. It's a tongue twister. So in the goddess temples are the energy of the history of the people, and the people who worked there, had rituals and did, I guess, ceremonies there, but also the people who constructed them. And so it was important to start to clear these and find out what imprints were there. Yeah. So Malta, for example, in the Second World War, was the most heavily bombed place of anywhere.
Really?
And still is the most heavily bombed place of anywhere. And that fascinated me.
It's a very key sort of strategic position.
It's a naval base, a natural naval area, and throughout history, from the beginning of time, it's played a role in warmongering, really.
Yeah.
But back in the BCs, somewhere between 3,500 and 5,000 BC, the island of Gozo was actually dedicated to the goddess Calypso. And they have 32 temples.
I read that, because you sent me bits of your book here, but when Calypso came up, you hadn't sent me the part that explained what Calypso was.
Okay.
What is this Calypso? Where's this word come from? It's fascinating. So very interesting stuff. Yeah.
So Calypso, like I said, the island of Gozo was dedicated to her. So they had a very strong goddess culture on that island and also on the main island. And in that process, they built this divine feminine spiritual community. And then the masculine came in. St. Paul was shipwrecked there. He created a Catholic religion that surpassed the Vatican. And then you had the Knights Templar with their spiritual masculine and a lot of warmongering that went on simply because the land was wanted or the waters were wanted for docking bays and transportation. But in the Second World War, if we scoot way forward, in the Second World War, heavily bombing, why was that? And why were these goddess temples not damaged and destroyed? What energy templates were in place that protected them from the heaviest bombing ever that's gone on the planet?
Oh, interesting. Now, you also say, I'm running out of time, there's lots to touch here, but I think we're doing a very good job of sketching some of this from your book, Remembering Isis, Reconnecting the Divine Feminine at the Goddess Temples of Malta. You've talked also about, in the book, about the connection Malta has to Egypt and Atlantis.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're speaking, I'm thinking, like, well, on an esoteric level, on a divine, on the greater level, on a multidimensional level, there's a lot more going on there, which is probably why Malta was somewhat protected in some way, because there's something else besides just being a safe harbour in a very strategic position.
Absolutely, and that's also the backbone, really, of why I was prompted to write the book, because we need to become aware that there are places on the planet, and Malta is one of them, that are really ancient-seeded places deliberately in order to help us at this time, and in other times, but at this time. And so before the waters came up, it was an Atlantean colony, and many people who live there will talk about the sense that they think it was an Atlantean community. Some people will talk about Lemurian community. So it has this ancient energy there. It's been protected and preserved in order to allow us at this time to move forward in developing our divine feminine consciousness and our galactic consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big picture. I mean, how's it going for you when you look at, say, the current situation in the US of A with their president, the Trump, and you're talking about the divine feminine? I mean, we're not seeing a lot of divine feminine over there. Or, on the other hand, we're seeing these revelations about various TV stars and movie stars and TV hosts and sexual abuse or sexual harassment of one sort or the other. Do you see all that as part of the revelation of revealing the truer feminine, that exposure of the malaligned masculine, so to speak?
Yes, I see it as part of that parcel. When, like 20-odd years ago, when people really began to explore that there were things happening in the shadow side of our collective with child abuse, with ritualistic behaviour, all those sorts of things, we have an unconscious side of our human behaviour that we just ignore. And even if we focus on it in some ways, we've got a lot to do individually and collectively to step outside of that shadow. And we have to cleanse these imprints, and not just the imprints in the earth, but the imprints in how we behave, how we think, and how we feel and what we do. And so some of what we see potentially as chaos and just, oh, my God, what's going on now, is an opportunity for each of us to go, okay, how is my reaction feeding that? And what do I need to do in order to release all of that from my own energy field? And from that, we become individually aware, and we become collectively aware, and we lift our consciousness.
That's a very good explanation. Last quick question, because the only thing that, because as you can hear, like I'm on board with you with this stuff. I've been reading this stuff since the 70s, you know. Also, nevertheless, what comes up for me occasionally, because I don't have these kind of experiences in this kind of way personally, so I don't have that subjective knowing, that grokness, you know. So what comes up for me is that there are so many people, and I've talked to them many times on my shows, for example, not just, and read their books, doing this kind of clearing work in various places under the banner of various indigenous cultures or various spiritual traditions, this, that, the other, indigenous, you know, wisdoms, all of these things collected. And often what is everybody right? Is everybody doing a piece of the work, or is there confliction, or is there just delusion in places? I mean, because there's not just sort of one thing being done here, but many people doing many things in many sacred sites and many times over many years.
Yeah, it's a really good question, because there will always be people who come up with something new that's not new, that's old, and say this has to be done this way and this is the way we do it and we've always done it. And you're right. And that's, I think, too, about developing our discernment. And that's an important thing, is we have to discern the truth intuitively as well as logically. But in the process of all of us doing our bit, one thing I think that brings that down to perhaps a sense of truth is we are all individual reflections of consciousness experiencing itself. And if we are that, then whatever we are doing is something that we are bringing forward in order for consciousness to experience itself. And so when we look at it as human beings and say, well, that doesn't make sense to me, and how come they're saying they're doing an indigenous way, but someone else is saying you should never use the flute over here, and you should never do it this way, and you should never use fire there, and the mind boggles, and the cynicism comes up. On some level, come back to that sense of we are all doing what we feel we're called to do.
Fantastic. Paulina Howfield, thank you. Your website, by the way, is www.matrixharmonics.com. Good title. And the book, Remembering Isis, Reconnecting the Divine Feminine at the Goddess Temples of Malta. I'm sure you'll find it around the place. Look it up. And thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Great pleasure.